Case number 12-5345, Lisa V. Moran, appellant v. Sean Donovan, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. Mr. Selden for the appellant, Mr. Guzman for the appellate.
Good morning.
Good morning.
If it please the court. The government served up a huge number of rationalizations, changes in position, and you might even say outright fabrications to the district court, which led the court to grant summary judgment. This is no more evident than in the district court's review of the candidate's qualifications and decide that the selectee, Maura Malone, was very, very well qualified for the position at issue in the case. The court went so far as to find Ms. Malone worked extensively on FHA mortgages, that's a quote, and that, quote, she had previously worked with Ginnie Mae and Finance Division staff. Leaving aside the fact that that's not true, the person intimately involved with her selection, Mr. Opitz, admitted at his deposition that he considered none of this when the selection was made.
Do you agree she was qualified?
No, absolutely she was not qualified.
Were the people on the list, the seven, qualified?
There are two things to know about that. One is they were not, and the second is that the selecting official admitted he didn't look at any of them anyway.
With the announcement, let me read the announcement. Experience that demonstrates knowledge of federal law and practices related to the secondary mortgage market, banking, structured financing, mortgage-backed securities, bankruptcy, and tax.
Correct.
That's not Ginnie Mae specific, is it?
Well, that's correct in part, but let's talk about the secondary.
What's correct in part?
It's not Ginnie Mae specific is correct in part. It is true that in the only place in the Department of Housing and Urban Development you could get that experience, which would be a program attorney in the Ginnie Mae Finance Division. But that's not the only place in the world that you could get that experience. You could get it working for Fannie or Freddie, and the point is one or both goes into capital markets, pools mortgages, deals with the Fed, deals with Treasury, deals with Wall Street, deals with bankruptcy. So you can get it there. You can get it on Wall Street also. And it seemed to pique the district court that Ms. Mulrain was somehow crafting the selection process so that only she could be picked, no matter who applied. And that's not true. All she was saying was that in HUD proper, the only program place you can get that experience is in Ginnie Mae, Finance Division. That would be it. So it's quite different from the way the judge portrayed it. I think where the judge went astray was, frankly, in that issue about qualifications, which we know is not correct, that Ms. Malone's supposed extensive experience in Ginnie Mae and with the staff was not considered by Mr. Opitz.
Why do you say supposed? She had extensive experience. She was clearly well-regarded. That's not disputed.
No, she didn't have that experience, in fact. And you look with
no extensive experience at HUD.
As a supervisory trial attorney.
Exactly. And she was well-regarded. Do you dispute that? They wanted to retain her in some position?
I know for a fact, Mr. Opitz. Well, there's two
convinced
people.
Convinced her not to go to the Army?
There are two people involved in that part of it. Mm-hmm. Mr. Opitz certainly knew nothing about her qualifications except what Ms. Cruciani may have mentioned to him. Mm-hmm. He never looked into it. He admitted that at his deposition. He just took her. Now, as far as her qualifications go, and it's a very disturbing part of the record here, what you'll see is this discussion of her extensive qualifications comes from two things. One is page 24 of 25 of her reply brief, of all places. And the only citation of that is Ms. Malone's own declaration and resume. Now, we all know if I were here with a Title VII plaintiff and trying to get beyond summary judgment with my client's own, a plaintiff's own assessment of her qualifications, that wouldn't count for anything. And looking at it that way, it shows what's wrong with breaking the rules of engagement on summary judgment. So we've got, in the beginning, the qualifications that the court was completely out of line with, out of the record. You then have another thing. Okay. You have another thing in which supposedly this list had candidates ranked. The HR department said they couldn't tell, okay, if anyone on that list was qualified. You then go to what is the most important thing, and you see this having been sold by HUD below and, again, being sold to this court.
Did Ms. Cruciani,
yes.
Am I pronouncing it? Did she know that Mulrain had applied? Was she transferred?
What we know is this. Do I have any direct evidence of that? No. But we know the following. She denied knowing that Ms. Mulrain was black. And, in fact, Ms. Mulrain said, we met, it was about a committee to work together. And we know, just by coincidence, that 2 or 3 weeks before this case, and it's the only time I would ever cite a district court opinion to the circuit court, because it's fact-based, Judge Kolar-Catelli found in a retaliation case that Ms. Cruciani was not credible. So you've got one district court finding her not credible and another district judge saying there's no doubt about her credibility. It's simply impossible.
It's pretty important whether she knew that Ms. Mulrain had applied, isn't it?
No, I don't think so, because there are more than one player here, and the central person who's supposedly involved in that is Mr. Opitz. And we know the actual course of events, which I'd like to explain if I can. He admitted at his deposition that that list of candidates, okay, that he got, he conducted interviews, and then that was it. There was no evaluation given to any of these candidates by him. None. Zero. So when the government writes in a brief that this was a wide-open competition, it wasn't. It was created for this litigation. The real thing that happened is very different.
Created for this litigation, explain that.
In other words, Mr. Guzman is a very talented lawyer and comes up with an explanation, but perhaps because I was involved in it from the beginning, I know more about the record. And I know that in her the affidavit she gave administratively, what Ms. Cruciani said was, quote, the only factor the agency considered was that OGC wanted to keep Moram alone. They had a belief, and it was disproven, that they believed it as it went through, that because she was already a 15, her qualifications didn't matter.
But why is it wrong, or why is it problematic for HUD to say, we want to keep this valuable employee? There's an email in here when she's going to leave that says, this is a big loss for HUD.
Well, I mean, everything comes up.
I mean, that would suggest that we want to keep her because she's talented and we want to find a place to keep her.
Yes, and she selected the Fair Housing Compliance Division,
mm-hmm.
and which is a different division. And what happened after that is that Mr. Opitz opened the certificate, looked at the candidates, and saw two things, which is also, you know, again, another rationalization created for litigation. Lisa Mulrain was the only person from the Ginnie Mae Finance Division. Of the three people he had in mind to apply, she was the only one who was African-American. So he opens up and sees that. Okay. And what's the other thing he sees? The seven people from HUD that the government is now claiming, you know, he had in mind for the job. But it's not true. I ran it down with him at his deposition. He admitted that none of the people he expected to apply from outside of the Ginnie Mae Finance Division were actually before him. And what happened, it's the sequence of events, Judge Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm.
She says, I want to go to the Fair Housing Compliance Division. Okay.
Right.
Opitz opens this roster of unranked people, sees that the only person there that he anticipated applying, Ginnie Mae Finance Division or without, is Lisa Mulrain. He goes back and he says, I don't know who I talked to. I don't know how Moram Malone came here. I never checked her qualifications. Somebody I can't remember a year later said, take a look at her. And supposedly at that point, after she wanted to be in Fair Housing Compliance, she comes out of there and gets reassigned to the Ginnie Mae Finance.
She had more experience as a supervisor than Mulrain, correct?
That is correct. But at the same time, Lisa Mulrain, on an acting basis, grant you, had run this division 88 separate times in the absence of the head of it. Okay, there's no doubt that Ms. Malone was a supervisor and that in formality, certainly Ms. Mulrain was not.
What bothers me about your position at a big picture level is you seem to be fighting the agency's assessment of qualifications for this position when they were phrased, as Judge Griffith said, as these often are, fairly broadly and generally in the vacancy announcement. Position descriptions.
Well, first of all,
they list a lot of different things.
No, they don't. I'm sorry, sir. We went over with the HR department and the specialized experience that's in the record. And I said to them, do you have to qualify on each one of these sentences separately?
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yes. That meant that
unless... Can you tell us which page, counsel, you're looking at in the record?
Yes, I have the list here of the joint appendix, I believe.
It's probably somewhere from 120 to 123 you're looking at, I think.
That's where I am, but I'm just not sure which list.
I'm not sure which page you're looking at.
I'm looking at the vacancy announcement.
The list was given to me and promptly put someplace.
Is it JA120?
Yeah, I've got it right here, actually, if you give me a second.
Job summary, major duties, qualifications required.
Correct. 120 is where the vacancy announcement begins, and I am reading from the second page of it.
Okay. Major duties? Is that the heading?
Specialized experience. Everybody agreed that is the experience that must be met to qualify for this job, including...
122? Is that what
you're... Yeah, we're on JA122, I think.
Yes.
Specialized experience, is that the heading?
Correct. And everybody agreed, including their expert, who once he agreed appeared nowhere in the case, that every one of these sentences that begins with a capital letter was a separate requirement, required. Okay. Mm-hmm. And their claim was, we could lateral in anybody regardless. And their own expert said, no. In other words, it's a separate requirement. Experience that demonstrates knowledge of federal law and practices related to the secondary mortgage market. Secondary, banking, structured finance, mortgage-backed securities, bankruptcy, and tax. I will say this. I am a supervisory attorney now of the trial attorneys, and I was a line attorney in the U.S. Attorney's Office for many years, and I remember a day that on 6 minutes' notice, I was called to argue a TRO on a government contract matter before Judge Flannery. And what happened is someone from the Army, a guy I remember, comes over and he said, this is an exit interview. This is what you got to do. You got to give everybody a chance and do this and give them a chance to say it. And I got up in front of Judge Flannery and said that. Not persuasively, by the way, I might add. Okay, but I don't know anything about advertising a government contract. I'm a supervisory trial lawyer. And then I was not even a supervisor. I learned a little bit of it to argue a case. Nobody being a supervisory trial lawyer knows how bonds get structured, knows how to deal with the Fed, knows how to deal with Wall Street, knows how Ginnie Mae works, knows what pooled markets are, knows what credit default swaps are, knows what tranches of mortgages that are assembled. Nobody knows that as a supervisory trial lawyer. And they said in creating this position that it would take you 2 years to learn how to do that. The head of the division said, and this is astonishing by the district court, she didn't want a deputy. I deposed her. She was a woman, I think. She said she was senior. I didn't go into it. Probably in her early, mid-60s, somewhere in there. And she said, I don't want a deputy. I'm an older woman. They're going to move me aside if someone can come in and do this job as good as I can. And somehow the district court said that created an inference that she wanted a deputy. Lisa Mulrain's a recognized expert from management there, and that got turned against her, and I'm way over
You're
my
way
time.
Over.
Way over.
Thank you. Okay. We'll give you some time back.
Thank you.
For rebuttal only.
I understand.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Javier Guzman on behalf of the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. It is undisputed in this case that the person who was reassigned to the position, Maura Malone, received an offer to leave HUD that HUD OGC senior management thought very highly of her and wanted to keep her and persuaded her to reconsider, invited her to explore other vacancies within OGC, that Ms. Malone, doing her own homework, discovered the finance division section and had a chance to explore it and decided that that's where she would like to be reassigned, and that OGC ultimately reassigned her for the purposes of retaining her. Those are the core undisputed facts in this case, and it's on that basis that the district court correctly found that there was no pretext here or any inference of discrimination.
That's not enough, is it? Did anyone at HUD ever make a determination that Ms. Malone was, in fact, qualified for this position according to the posted qualifications?
Well, there was no one made a formal determination because she wasn't hired or selected through the vacancy announcement. She was laterally reassigned to the position based on the knowledge of OGC hierarchy that she was an outstanding attorney and had a demonstrated record of performance at HUD. She had been an attorney there for approximately 17 years. She had served as a supervisor for 9 years. Much of her substantive experience was in the FHA insured mortgage sector, which is part of the affordable housing cycle that is that Ginnie Mae supports at the end of the day, the mortgage-backed securities that are being issued.
But she didn't have Ginnie Mae specific experience, right?
She had some. She did not have as much Ginnie Mae experience, certainly, as the appellant did, but she had worked with Catherine Davies.
What do you make of Mr. Gerber's expert testimony that, in fact, Ginnie Mae experience itself was required?
Well, we believe that the court acted well within its discretion in not considering that expert.
How could that be at summary judgment? At summary judgment, the question is whether there is a conflict in the record that creates a triable issue of material fact.
But the court still has its gatekeeper role, even at the summary judgment stage. It doesn't have to accept any proffered expert opinion. It's still entitled to and should engage in the relevance and reliability determination. Here it found that Mr. Gerber...
Reliability? That sounds like jury...
Relevance, not reliability.
In what sense is Mr. Gerber's opinion not relevant?
Well, in two respects. First, his opinion had two aspects to it. Mr. Gerber said that this position had been misclassified as a supervisory position as opposed to a subject matter expert position. And the district court correctly found that that was not material and didn't have an impact in this case because the very most that would show is that there was a mistake made in the classification, but that mistake would have occurred in 2006, long before the position was actually authorized to be filled or advertised or actually filled. And second of all, none of the individuals that were involved in the reassignment decision, Cruciani, Davies, or Opitz, had anything to do with the classification, and there was nothing in the record to suggest that they were aware of any error. So she properly found that that did not create a fact issue in terms of whether it had been classified properly or not. The agency's position is that the position was classified properly, and the classifier was deposed in the case and said as much.
How could it be permissible, given that nobody at HUD made a determination that Ms. Malone was qualified to bring her over to fill this spot that had been posted with particular qualifications?
Well, if we take a step back, the position was envisioned by John Opitz, and he's the one who, I guess you consider the architect of the position. At least he was a driving force behind its creation. If you look at page 104 of the joint appendix, there's an email from Mr. Opitz from February 07, so well before the creation of the authorization of the position and its filling. And there he talks about the need to develop management skills and needing someone to assist with the management of the finance division, and that there were attorneys both inside and outside of the finance division who he thought could be good candidates. That indicates that, and the way the appellant has set this up, is that this position required some type of subject matter expertise.
I'm not sure that's really responsive. I mean, there is a way, surely, that HUD could have done what it did. But in the government, you know, we do things in a particular way, and when a position is posted as requiring certain skills, that tells people who can apply, who can't apply, that creates the pool. And if the decision makers in this case had decided, actually, with this internal person who we really value, let's reframe this job, wouldn't the appropriate, in fact, the required thing be to withdraw the announcement and set it up differently? What we're going to do instead, we're going to fill this position laterally.
Well, the position we don't believe was reframed. What the vacancy announcement set out was a constellation of qualifications for it. But the agency was not, certainly that is relevant, but to suggest that the agency needed to sit there with a checklist and vet every single applicant or Ms. Malone for the position, we don't think is required.
Well, that's what people do. I mean, if you set out a requirement that you then don't in fact impose, you've acted unfairly, I think, under federal law, because You've deterred a bunch of people who, had they somehow managed to get in the door, would have been considered. I mean, those qualification lists do matter.
Well, yes, they do matter in one sense, but certainly the agency can laterally reassign people. After all, that's what Ms. Moran, the appellant here, was reassigned in the same circumstances as Ms. Malone. There wasn't any formal checklist of qualifications. There's a familiarity with Ms. Moran's work product as there was with Ms. Malone's, and there was a determination that as an experienced supervisory attorney, you also had experience in insured housing, insured mortgage housing.
When you refer to Ms. Moran having been reassigned in the same way, which reassignment are you referring to?
I'm referring to Ms. Moran's reassignment to the finance division in 2000. She was reassigned laterally.
With a job opening posted that she was not determined to be qualified for?
There was not a job opening posted.
Okay. That makes all the difference now. As I said, you could have done this, but you would have had to do it differently under HR procedures, no?
We don't believe that that is a difference, but we don't think that that's a controlling or material one. They were both reassigned because based on the supervisor's knowledge of both their respective abilities and their work product, and determination that would satisfy her to be able to do the job within the division.
So if I post a job and I say college degree required, mm-hmm. and a lot of qualified minority employees don't apply because they don't have a college degree, and I have someone working within my agency at a lower level who is non-minority, who doesn't have a college degree, and I think, this person's terrific, and I bring that person into the position, you don't think that I've raised any inference of discrimination under Title VII?
I believe, Your Honor, that is a different case from what we have here. If you look at the vacancy announcement and you look at the qualifications in it, the qualifications don't limit themselves to the Ginnie Mae subject matter expertise or Ginnie Mae experience. If you look at quality ranking factor one in the vacancy announcement, and these are the factors that were determined to be relevant to the position, it talks about having knowledge about the laws and programs of urban...
I'm sorry, which page are you on?
Yes, I'm sorry, Your Honor. If you look at JA 122, bottom, continuing over to 123.
Okay, knowledge of federal programs and practices.
Related to the programs and mission of HUD.
Such knowledge could include any of the following, government right? And your... opposing counsel has referred to the major duties, I suppose, on 121, which he thinks are more specifically directed toward Ginnie Mae experience.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, if you're reading, I won't attempt to speak over that.
Oh, go ahead.
So the point that I was trying to make here is that the quality ranking factors, you have to look at the vacancy announcement in its totality, first of all. I don't think it's fair to seize on a single line or a single sentence from it to determine whether someone was qualified or not. The quality ranking factors...
Who is the decision maker here? Who is the person that decided who was going to fill the slot?
Well, Ms. Cruciani was the person who had the authority and, in fact, approved the reassignment.
And was she aware of Mulrain's application at the time?
No, she was not. Appellant says that there's nothing in the record indicating one way or another. Right. That's not correct. There's declaration evidence from Ms. Cruciani, which was not disputed by the appellant at the summary judgment stage. If you look at the statement of facts...
Why isn't that dispositive right there?
Well, we believe it is. Yeah. We believe that's one of the core facts that has to lead to the conclusion that there wasn't any racial animus or discriminatory intent behind the decision to reassign Ms. Malone to the position.
Is there any suggestion that Malone wasn't qualified?
No, there's absolutely not, Your Honor.
And you're saying the key decision maker was not aware of Ms. Mulrain's application?
That's correct, Your Honor. And if you look at in the record at the statement of facts filed by the plaintiff at the time, paragraph 56, they don't dispute Ms. Cruciani's lack of knowledge. They simply say it's not material. And we disagree. We believe it's dispositive, or at a minimum, it's material.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll give you back 2 minutes.
Thank you, Judge Griffith. There's really a couple points, and only in reply, that I would make. The first is about the expert. The expert didn't say that the job was misclassified. That's an inference that Judge Huvel drew. What the expert said is this job can't be a 15 unless it's for a subject matter expert. On the issue of his being qualified as an expert, Chief Judge Lambert
said, how's that different from saying it's misclassified?
That's an inference to draw from it. Another inference to draw when someone has created this is that the real thing that they are looking for is a subject matter expert. That is certainly a permissible inference to be drawn, but on summary judgment, it is not the only one to be drawn. That's a great argument to make at some point in front of a jury. Okay. The sleight of hand that I'm talking about, okay, we looked at the vacancy announcement, and the issue ran down, look at the quality ranking factors, look at this. Okay. But here's what the defendant's own HR people said, and then their own experts said, which is why he's not in their briefs and on summary judgment. Their own, this is on page 10 of our brief. Their own HR personnel admitted that in order to qualify for the position, whether through competition or lateral reassignment, an individual had to possess the required specialized experience before filling the position. That's the specialized experience. That gets you above to be considered.
And what's the line or in the vacancy announcement that Malone didn't have?
It is the line beginning with experience that demonstrates knowledge of federal law and practices. It is the second sentence.
Relating to. Of it? Is it relating to the secondary mortgage market, or is it relating to structured finance, or is it relating to mortgage risk? Which part of it did Ms. Malone not have?
She didn't have any of it. She didn't have a bit of it.
I mean, there is some looseness in the way that this job is described elsewhere, the quality ranking factors that your opposing counsel was talking about, knowledge of federal laws and practices related to the programs and missions of HUD. Such knowledge could include.
No, but the, right. But the witnesses testified once you make the, once you're qualified with specialized experience, that's how, if you have that, you will be looked at by the management. The testimony, and that's undisputed, is that you had to make the specialized experience first.
Although looking at the announcement as a whole, if you look at the Joint Appendix at page 125, when they talk about the crediting plan, how are you going to be evaluated? And under the outstanding level, it says a candidate's outstanding if she has substantial knowledge of housing finance law and practices, including Ginnie Mae 1 and 2 mortgage-backed securities and other programs, correct, right, which would be Ms. Mulrain, or a similar level of knowledge and understanding of law and practice as demonstrated by extensive experience in representing governmental agencies administering housing and urban development programs. A kind of a either-or, and that sounds like that really captures Ms. Malone more.
Except it's not what their own expert testified to. He said specialized experience has to be met. It's not what their HR personnel testified to.
What did their HR personnel say?
I'm looking at page 10 of our brief. They admitted that each person, whether by lateral reassignment or whether by competitive selection, had to meet the specialized experience requirements sentence by sentence, quote unquote, for the job.
You made earlier reference to someone who said that it would take 2 years to get up to speed. Wasn't that for new attorneys, however?
Well, that's the question. That is an inference that comes up. It takes new attorneys to the, does it mean new attorneys?
Ms. Malone wasn't a new attorney by any standard.
The question is,
she
though,
had been around a long time and was excellent, right? She was really, really good.
Did it mean new attorneys to the division or new attorneys? That's a reasonable question for a jury. I do understand that. It is not the only inference to draw on summary judgment. The only point I'll make in the end is that if Ms. Cruciani doesn't know that Lisa Mulrain applied, that hardly ends this. Her requirement is one thing and one thing only, to take what Opitz said and check it off. And that's the way the federal government works. And whether Opitz, as he did, opened the package one day and saw that nobody he thought would apply for this job, except Lisa Mulrain, would apply. That's it.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. Case is submitted.